You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
The pornography industry almost now single-handedly fuels the demand for child sex trafficking. People are sold into sex slavery. It is filmed and sold to the internet, and the person consuming pornography has no idea whether the person in the video is consensually doing what they're doing or they are a sex slave who's been sold into it.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
All right, well, welcome to this week's Momentum. All around Australia, you're tuned in with Tim and Des, and it is Momentum, a men's ministry by men for men. And, you know, we're here to help you just do that life that little bit better, whatever that looks like for you. And, of course, that covers a variety of things. And, look, we've got a whole bunch of stuff on our website, MomentumAustralia.org. MomentumAustralia.org. You can have a look around the website a bit later. There's feedback, questions, videos, stuff that will help you on your journey, and, of course, previous shows as well. And maybe you'd like to financially support Momentum as well. That would be awesome, MomentumAustralia.org. But my good friend and co-host, Des, is with us once again. Mr. Kennedy, how are you this week?
Mr. Kennedy, wow. Well, I get a full title today, man. I'm great. I just love that we're blessed to do this show. And we know that men are listening to it in all sorts of different situations and you know, situations internally as well as externally. And I just want to mention our care line. So through our friends at Careline Connections, we have an amazing, easy-to-remember number, which is 1-800-000-MEN. That's 1-800-000-636. And you can reach out to that care line 7 days a week between 9 a.m. and 11 p.m. And they're a great bunch of people who are trained to listen, to care for you. So please feel happy to reach out to them. So, Tim, how are you today?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I love the fact that we've got this opportunity for men. And the truth is we all need a confidential conversation at times. And some of that might be about what's happening in our private life. And, you know, we've talked about pornography several times on the show, Des. Is one of the key areas that men can struggle with. And it's also one of the key areas that perhaps the church really struggles to actually talk about.
That's true, you know, and statistics show that pornography use and addiction, sadly, affects so many men of faith who are, you know, go to church, you know, every week and still it impacts them.
You know, up until now on Momentum, and you've probably listened to some of the backstories and shows, if you haven't, encourage you to do that later. But, you know, we've only really discussed some of the effects and struggles that adult men have with pornography. But this week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to take a look at how pornography is actually affecting the youth around Australia.
We're talking to Youth for Christ, an amazing organization that's launched a new course for students, school students, and bringing awareness to and educating them on the dangers and impact on their lives of pornography.
The course is called What's Normal, and joining us this week is the director of What's Normal from Youth for Christ. His name is Paul Bedwell. Welcome to Momentum, Paul. Great to have you here, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Des. It's good to be here. And you probably might be aware that one of the founding leaders of Youth for Christ globally was none other than Billy Graham. So yeah. We are part of the longest running international Christian youth organization in the world, which is a huge privilege. And also, you know, at a time like this, the gospel going forth, it's a pretty exciting thing to be a part of.
Yeah. It's an incredible legacy, isn't it, really, when you think about what he left us and how you guys get to carry the baton now for the next generation, which is awesome. And we are super thrilled because, I mean, we've talked with Cindy Bagavi, who's the head of Youth for Christ, of course, a couple of times on the show. And you know, we love what she has to say, but we're super excited that you guys are launching this course. Before we get into the details of that, well, let's just talk about you for a tick, because you've had your own story with addiction in the background, and you know, it'd be great for people to, I suppose, to hear a bit more about you and kind of put it into context as to how you ended up with Youth for Christ. So tell us a bit about your backstory, Paul.
Absolutely love to. Tim, I'm the luckiest man alive, or the most blessed as I see it. The Apostle Paul called himself the chief of sinners, but I feel like I have just experienced God's grace in such a real way. I grew up in a very, very normal middle-class Aussie home, and like most young Aussies, played a lot of sport, and I was pretty studious and studied pretty well. And but by the time I was about 10, I got sent to a shrink psychologist because I had I developed this anxiety issue even at that young age, and did some testing and they found out that I was bright. So they moved me forward a year in school, but diagnosed this anxiety thing that went on for the next couple of decades, to be honest. I got on with life despite, you know, after this diagnosis, and just played sport and studied and, you know, pretty normal Aussie upbringing. I wasn't in church, although I believed in God. I there's never really been a time when I didn't believe or know that God was real. But I just had no foundation in the Word of God, no real church foundation. And by the time I finished school, I got into medical science at the University of Sydney, and then ultimately into the medicine and surgery degree. But the whole time my anxiety was just progressively bubbling along, getting worse. I'd have like good days, good times. It wasn't always bad. But at crunch time in the evenings and in other moments, I'd have a lot of discomfort with the anxiety.
So tell us how that played out in your life. I mean, saying to somebody they've got anxiety, what does it actually mean? What does it look like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was the best way I can describe it. It would be like, let's say you had this huge job interview, like the dream job, and you want to get there and you want to nail it. And you're on the way there and then your car breaks down and you're like already 15 minutes late, you know, and you would have this feeling, this thing go on biologically, physically in your body. The way I would describe it is you have that experience, that physical experience, but there's no job interview. There's nothing causing it. It's just there. And so it was awful. I described it as sort of like a living hell. But I was familiar with it because it had been there since childhood and I knew something wasn't right, but I didn't know what. I didn't have language around it. All I had was the language of the different diagnostic labels. And for me, it's just a God story. I finished medicine. I was working as a doctor and it just kept getting worse. And the whole time I'd tried basically everything that the world can offer. You know, you can imagine as a doctor, you get to get an inside look into the latest and greatest therapies. I tried it all. I tried every kind of therapy, a lot of different types of antidepressant medicines, anti-anxiety medicines. And for me, none of that really worked. I might get reprieve for a little bit, feel comfortable for a few days. Even sometimes the label itself would bring a degree of comfort. Okay, now I know what's wrong with me. But it never brought any lasting freedom, any lasting change. And ultimately, what happened for me is at the end of my rope, I just decided to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol because the story I was telling myself was a good one. Nothing else has worked. This anxiety is so bad. Why wouldn't I go self-medicate? And I'm sure you can imagine drug and alcohol self-medication isn't helpful.
I guess, you know, if you take normal medication, you know what the limits are. They say take two of these tablets in the morning or whatever it looks like, right? Whereas with drugs and alcohol, you can go, just go for it. Yeah, you know?
That's it. And so I spiraled out of control very quickly and, found myself after a few painful years, found myself in a rehab thinking, how did I get here? You know, I'm meant to be helping people. And of course, in a moment of desperation, like many people share, without any hope in anything else, because I've tried it all and nothing's worked, I cry out to God, the God of my childhood, and I say, God, help me. And, I don't get instantly zapped and everything's all better. You know, God took me on a process and it took years and there was other people involved. I'm not anti-therapy. I'm not, I think that there's a place for that. But what happened for me was very shortly after praying that prayer, not everything being fixed, but something shifted significantly. I began to develop hope on the inside. There actually was a way out. And it was very simple hope. It came like this. Oh my goodness, God's real.
Yeah.
You know, when you realize that God's actually real, that God, the God who made everything is then, if he's real, then he's capable. And if he's capable to help me, oh my goodness, I have to know who this God is. And for me, that was a road to Damascus time. I went from hopeless and despairing to just a radical born again, Jesus freak Christian.
Man, you get me goosebumps when you tell that story. It's amazing. Yeah. It's great.
It's the grace of God. You know, I did everything possible to avoid that. I was arrogant, thought I had the way, thought I had a justification for all my sinful behavior, all of it. And God met me with mercy and goodness. And you know, I often have to defend my story sometimes because people say, yeah, but what about, you know, what about the God who, what about for people who turn to God and he doesn't give them peace? And I say, well, I don't know that God. Yeah. The Bible teaches that one of the fruit of the Holy Spirit is peace. Mm. Now, I'm not saying people get an easy road. My circumstances got more complicated after coming to God and things were more difficult. Mm. But God moving onto the inside of your life, that changes stuff. That's not a passive experience. You know, it's impossible for God to reveal himself to you and for you to remain the same. He's incredible. I went through a funny time after that. I was thinking, you know, I've studied 8 years to be a doctor. I'm pretty sure God will use me now to be a missionary doctor. But it was just a bizarre thing. I got offered this job as a doctor in Perth and I was convinced I was going to take it, but I'd learned enough. You know, I have a wonderful senior pastor who raised me in the Lord, taught me how to read the Bible every day and to pray and to hear from God and to wait on God. And so I did that. I said, I'm just going to wait on God, even though I'm pretty sure I'm going to Perth. Well, in my devotional life, every day for about 6 months, God would speak to me about staying. And I said, fine, Lord, I'm going to fleece this like Gideon did. Lord, if you want me to stay, give me a promotion in my job. I was doing research in type 2 diabetes at the time. No one was getting promoted in the company I was working for. It was going backwards. And sure enough, at the end of my meeting with the boss, I've got my hand on the door on the way out, and she says, oh, by the way, I forgot to say, we're giving you a promotion. Wow. And I was like, no, I mean, yes. And I resigned from that position and remained, at that time it was unpaid youth ministry. But the Lord spoke to me, it was 1 Peter 5, which says, you know, stay and look after the flock, which I've entrusted to you, do it willingly, not grudgingly. And I did that. And now it's so clear to me, this is the God, God's prepared me for this time. So I do that happily.
It's a cool story, man. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for being vulnerable and honest and transparent with us about the journey, because I mean, the truth is, you know, we've all got a backstory, and I love to say, you know, everyone's got a story. Just got to ask a couple of questions, and it's amazing what you find out about people. And hopefully for people listening too, that will encourage them, because, you know, the truth is that sometimes we can get discouraged when we see other people's journeys and it's been radical and there's just been this instant transformation or freedom or whatever. And yet the truth is, for probably 95% of us, it's just been there's been a moment and then it's been a slow journey. That, you know, as they say, the salvation is instantaneous. The transformation takes a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's often the case. Before we run to a quick break for the first part of the show, Paul, just tell us a bit quickly about how you ended up at Youth for Christ. And then we'll come back in the second part of the show and talk about the course where you guys are about to launch. But how was your journey then from that point that you just finished in the story to then, hey, I'm now at Youth for Christ and hey, now we're releasing this course for kids?
Yes. Yeah, sure. So my life, I follow Jesus and I pray every day, Lord, do with my life whatever you want. Probably like many of us.
The dangerous prayer to pray, but yeah,
it's dangerous. And God, I believe God knows that I'll do it. You know, I've gone through the testing. You know, leaving behind a career in medicine was a big turning point, sure, in faith. So I think he knows that I'll do what he asks. And so I got a tap on the shoulder from Cindy and someone else at Youth for Christ saying, would you consider this? And look, I lead a youth ministry and children's ministry, and I teach scripture in high school. So my schedule is pretty full. But I prayed about it and I felt that I got the yes from the Lord. So I said, I'll do it. But, you know, I don't have many days a week to give to this. Yeah. And I said, but what I can do is I'll help scale it. So I won't be the guy, because I didn't create the program. It was Laura Pinter, amazing woman of God, came up with this years ago. It was slightly different then. It was sort of going into individual schools and bringing this message of you can change culture. But for me, I said, look, I'm not going to be the guy to run around to every school, but I will make it available. and I'll make a video series and I'll work with experts, because that way, first of all, it can go into every school. It's you can multiply this. And but more than that, I often have a heart for the little country church, and their youth minister is 65 and a retiree and a part-time, I can have this conversation pretty easily because I'm in youth and I do it all the time, but it's not easy for everyone to have these sort of conversations. And truly, this course, this isn't the salvation for all. It's something that will start a conversation that hopefully becomes a lifelong conversation. And we just break the ice a little bit into that and share some facts from some relevant experts and some stories about the power of God, and that will allow people to gain hope again. Mm. And to take this, to take this as the fight of our age, the fight of our day. The New Testament is littered with scriptures that say, for those who overcome, for those who overcome, for those who overcome. Well, it's two things. Overcoming is overcoming persecution from the outside, and it's overcoming temptation coming to the inside. Interestingly, for those churches that will resist the temptation and make a stand, that's when the persecution comes. Mm. Both. But we need to overcome that. We need to prepare young people and all people that this is the fight of your life. Jesus will say, you've done miracles, you've healed the sick, you've cast out devils, but he'll say, depart from me, I never knew you, you workers of iniquity. Mm. We're talking about salvation of Christians. We're talking about people who will get tempted and will need to learn the battle plan for staying faithful. And it's not just our privilege, it's our responsibility to raise people to overcome in the Lord Jesus. So yeah, that's why I do what I do.
Yeah, that's cool. So we are talking about the What's Normal course that's just been released by Youth for Christ Australia, and the director, Paul Bedwell, is our special guest on the show this week. We're going to come back and explore the course in the second part of the show, so stay tuned. In the meantime, just going to throw a couple of websites at you. There's yfc.org.au/what's_normal. Let me repeat that for you, yfc.org.au/what's_normal. If you want to have a quick squiz around that and just familiarize yourself before we come back into the show and explore this some more. And of course, our website, MomentumAustralia.org, as we go to a break, and we'll be back with Paul from Youth for Christ on the second part of the show in just a tick. Stay tuned.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
All right. Well, welcome back to Momentum. Thanks for hanging around, by the way, and rejoining us. Our special guest this week is Paul Bedwell. He's the director for What's Normal, which is a brand new course that Youth for Christ have just released. And it's helping kids educate and be aware of the dangers of pornography. So, Paul, before we launch into the course and what that's about, let's, I suppose, look at some of the stats and look at the bigger picture and go, how much of a problem is this for the youth of Australia in today? What are the current stats or thereabouts? What are some of the figures that we're looking at?
Sure. Yeah, Tim, it's honestly one of these things I wish I never had to talk about. Probably mm-hmm. We all feel the same. It's distressing for adults. It's particularly distressing with young kids. And behind the statistics, you just think about this for a moment. I'll talk the stats in a moment, but just think this through. Just think of a 12-year-old, where your brain's at in relation to learning, what you're picking up, what key relationships you're identifying and figuring out, how your brain's being formed for how you're going to manage the relationships with people, the opposite sex, the same sex, for the rest of your life. And picture your ability to control impulses, your hormones at that age. Put all that together and then imagine sitting in your bedroom with an iPhone and no internet filter. At times like this, I honestly thank God. I was saying this before. I thank God that I did not walk through life as a teenager with an iPhone, with a phone in my hand. Mm. And then you picture what it would be like, even just because the statistics are what they are, but just as a mental picture, what's it like for a 13-year-old to watch violent and degrading sexual violence in 80 or 90% of pornography? What are they learning about women? What are they learning about their role as men? What are they learning about manhood? What are they learning about love and respect? What are they learning about consent?
Mm. Yes.
One 12-year-old watching pornography is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
a 2017 study of Australian and New Zealand, of Australians published in the Public Health Journal of Australia and New Zealand found that 87%, nearly 90% of 15 to 29-year-olds have viewed pornography. And the median age for males first looking at it was 13. This is back in 2017. It's highly likely that upwards of 90, 95% of 11 and 12-year-old boys in this country have accessed pornography. Girls are behind, but not too far behind. It's a real issue. The median age for girls in this study was 16. It's probably much younger than that now.
And is most of the access, do you think, from like a parent has an iPhone and they, you know, for whatever reason, they watch pornography on their iPhone and then you set it down, the kid picks it up and comes across it. Is that the normal way that kids get access to it, or is it just by browsing stuff?
Yeah, I don't have data, but I do have my experience. I'm with young people all the time. Most year sixes will get their first smartphone. Most of them are savvy enough to, many of them, maybe not most, many are savvy enough to work around blockers and parental consent controls. And aside from that, it's very easy to have a friend just come and show you something when everyone's got a phone. Mm-hmm. Not to mention if it's not a phone, they're on an iPad. Most kids are on an iPad since about the age of 5 or 6. Mm. So with the power of a friend that comes along, with the power of often it's some of the ads. What we see a lot, a pathway in, is that the ads that pop up in video games, in games on an iPhone or a Android phone, these things pop up and they're quite suggestive. And they lead people, the common story we hear, they lead people down a slippery slope. So many people say, I was just looking at Instagram and now it's TikTok. I was on TikTok or Instagram and I saw this ad and it had a link and I clicked the link. So there's many funnels into this. It's very simple and it's why we're seeing the numbers that we're seeing. And it's not accidental. It's a marketing strategy. There are multi-billion dollar companies targeting their marketing. I could tell you some really disturbing stuff. The trending on Pornhub in September last year was watch what's going on at schoolies in Australia. Number one trending topic on Pornhub. Why? Because the challenge at schoolies was to make a sex tape and post it onto Pornhub. That's the schoolies challenge of our day and age.
Wow. Wow. And to bounce off the back of the name of the course, What's Normal, I suppose for kids these days with iPhones in school, I mean, it's just considered normal that most, certainly guys, would be looking at porn to some degree.
Yeah, not only normalized by your peers, we hear reports of school PDHPE people telling their students that porn is just a normal part of exploring sexuality as a teenager.
Wow.
Right. Why? Because the teachers themselves are watching, so how can they say that it's not right?
Yeah.
Public schools, PE classes. I know it's not in the curriculum, but we hear reports all the time of that's what's being taught in public schools.
Wow.
I mean, I have so many questions on that, but let's just keep moving on to it. Let's get back to the course, right? I mean, what's normal? I mean, obviously it's posing the question then, I suppose, to fight normality. But tell us about then, I suppose, the catalyst behind the course. You mentioned it wasn't you, Paul, that came up with it, but I think you said Linda was the lady that came up with it. But what was the catalyst behind that, that I suppose you guys went, hey, we should do something with this? Well, is there something we can do about this? What was that point where you guys as Youth for Christ went, we see this as a huge problem, let's see if we can do something with this?
Yeah, Laura Pinter, she's now Laura Wolseley, she's an amazing woman. She saw that there was a huge cultural pressure, not just to watch pornography, but to do all sorts of other things. For young girls, it may not be pornography as much, but it's to look a certain way and to post a certain amount of skin each post and to have this perfect social media profile. And now it's probably moved on from a perfect profile to a real but suggestive profile. Mm-hmm. That's the normal. Other pressures include what you need to do in a relationship, sending nudes to each other, which is, again, become normalized in many circles. You got multi-billion dollar companies out of the US branding their product Send Nudes. So she got fed up with that and started a campaign which ultimately led to Zoom Magazine being booted from Coles and going bankrupt. It was a wonderful campaign. They basically said this shouldn't be in Coles, it's suggestive. People got on board with that and got moved out of Coles, and the company lost a major distributor and went belly up. So that was it was in some ways a win for, not for the company, of course, but for censorship or protection of young people. And from that, you know, the world was very interested in what she was doing. She since gave, I think there was the Youth for Christ acquired that program, and that's where I came in. As I mentioned, I'm not the guy to, I don't have capacity to run around to all the schools, but my vision for the program was twofold. Number one was to make it accessible to everybody, so everyone can take this. Number two is a little more focused. The second thing I did was I really focused what we're doing towards Christians. Why would I do that? It was quite deliberate. We realized that we were struggling to help Christian men get free from watching pornography. And they have the power of the living God living on the inside. We just made the honest decision that we do not know how people who don't have a relationship with God can ever get free. I'm not saying they don't exist, and God bless all the various support agencies out there. God bless harm minimization and all that. But we realized for ourselves that our focus was to help Christians, those who wanted to follow Jesus and were willing to take hold of the power of God's word and the Spirit of God, help them get free. Because we realized youth pastors talk to you, not just the kids coming to your youth, talk to your team, have an open, shame-free conversation with your team and find out how many of them are still struggling with watching pornography. And the number is always shocking. No one thinks my Christian boy is watching it. Here's a couple of the lies that come up. My kid's a good boy and he loves the Lord. He's not going to watch it. And for others, it will be girls aren't impacted by it. Well, both of those things aren't true. We've interviewed many young women who have fallen down the same path of temptation and really struggled and needed help. And in a shame-free, safe environment that we all know is important. And I heard one anecdote. Now, I don't know if this is true, but of a major denomination took a study of their ministers graduating from Bible college and found that 100, this was in a denomination which had celibate ministers, 100% of their graduating ministers acknowledged watching pornography regularly.
100%. That's amazing.
I don't think that's 100%. Now, I don't think that's, this is 20, you know, 21-year-old men. I don't think that's reflective of all the denominations and groups, and I don't think that's a reflection across Christendom. But I will say we've got a fight on for the Christian men in this area, and we have to, as you said, we have to come at this with a wartime mentality. We are on the same side. We are fighting together. The enemy is the temptation that comes against us. No one is disqualified. No one need be shamed. There's no moral high ground. No one is in judgment. We need to come together and pray and ask the Lord to help us and believe that he will. And he will. And he is.
Paul, there was a video that you guys sent through in preparation for this interview. And I just want to quickly read through some of the stats. Now, there was a guy and a girl telling stories, which ended up being their story. But some of the things that I jotted down from that, and that was, and we talked about this, half of guys and a third of girls first viewed pornography before their teenage years. It creates an alternate reality about women and sex. And it can also, for guys, mean that a no from a woman actually can mean yes. It leaves men particularly feeling ashamed, lonely, powerless to stop watching pornography. An addiction to porn is almost identical to an addiction to heroin. We are, as we know, constantly bombarded by sexualized images. Of course, then it goes deeper and it sows seeds into young boys and teenage boys that we must not have what it takes to be a man. And then, of course, watching some of the stuff on the news and how men sometimes don't get painted in a great light tells him that being a man may not be a good thing anyway. That's from a male perspective. From a female perspective, the pop culture presents unrealistic images sets unrealistic expectations for girls to follow. They go into imagination land, they pick an image, they try and follow that image, and that's what their goal is, to look like this, which of course can lead to all sorts of eating disorders and things like that. Guys asking girls for nudes, we've talked about that. And they do it partly because they don't want to lose the guy. And then, of course, that sets them on a different path. And then, of course, they might believe that they have to look a certain way, act a certain way to get a guy or keep a guy. And so they end up becoming something that they didn't want to become anyway. So that's the bits that I took down, and there's a lot in that. But, I mean, these, I suppose, are some of the statements and some of the damaging stuff about pornography that we don't necessarily talk about. And with respect to when you've got teachers saying, oh, no, it's a normal part of exploring and growing up and this is okay, go, okay, well, perhaps the first accidental look is excused. But after that, when you start going down this track, it is a very slippery slope. And as Des said before, when you allow this stuff in your life, it does change the way that you see the other sex, the opposite sex, sex in general, all of that stuff. And then, of course, as we're finding out, men 20, 30 years down the track are still having a hard time undoing some of that.
Yes. I mean, what we're talking about is really in this video, that in the material you've seen, it's the tip of the iceberg. There's a group called Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug. They're identifying that pornography is just the latest heroin, coke, crack cocaine. It's the latest drug which is plaguing the world. They've taken a really interesting approach. So they've parked, it's a deliberately secular approach. They've parked the religious and the spiritual and the moral and the ethical. And so leaving that to one side, They've got doctors, psychologists, sociologists, politicians, saying, what are the effects of watching pornography? Let me just list a couple of those. We've just scratched the surface. Young men and women's brains are being permanently damaged by watching pornography, not only for the sexually explicit and violent nature of it, but because it's an addiction, it sets up a brain that is incapable of experiencing pleasure from normal life. The only experience of pleasure that a person addicted to pornography can get is the ever-increasing demand for more. For more risque, for more problematic. You can see where that goes. You've heard the anecdotes of serial killers saying, I got stuck into pornography early. And that's even leaving that to one side. Anhedonia is the medical term for the inability to experience pleasure. Young people whose brains are getting wired by porn for that ultimate hit. You think about what sex was originally designed for. It wasn't meant to be all the time. It was a very climactic moment after a long period of waiting. And if you know, if your dating life looked like mine when I was younger, a very long period. Right? But it wasn't meant to be instantaneous. Now 12-year-olds having this climatic lunar park experience. That's what Dr. Alan Meyer calls it. A lunar park experience. We weren't made for lunar park, we were made for the garden. And people are having these experiences and all of a sudden everything else in life looks completely dull and gray. Anhedonia, they can't experience pleasure. Brains getting damaged because they can't experience pleasure in anything else. Then take relationships. Men who are addicted and watch pornography cannot, the data is revealing, cannot maintain healthy relationships. They can't perform sexually because the real woman right in front of them looks nothing like and will do nothing of the things that they've grown up watching. So they have no ability to maintain sexual function. But more than that, they're unable to conceive of someone who they're sexually attracted to as a human. You think about how necessary that is to building a relationship. You need to know that you're dealing with a real human with real needs and real feelings. The men who are hooked on porn can't find a real woman and can't maintain a relationship with one because what they've grown up on. Anhedonia, depression, increases in suicide, increases in domestic violence, increases in just general aggression, sexual aggression. People are unable to de-link aggression from sex. Think about that for a moment. They can't separate violence from sex. What does that tell their future wife or husband? How are they going to sustain a marriage?
Yeah.
How are they going to sustain a long-term relationship? Of course, there's the societal effects, and this is where politicians are involved. The pornography industry almost now single-handedly fuels the demand for child sex trafficking or prostitution. People are sold into sex slavery. It is filmed and sold to the internet, and the person consuming pornography has no idea whether the person in the video is consensually doing what they're doing or they are a sex slave who's been sold into it. They have no idea if they're over 18 or under 18. They have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, we've taken a very real, honest look at pornography at large. And I mean, those stats, Paul, that you're putting there about some of the damages, I mean, that's real life, right? This is the challenge. And these are, sadly, some of the stories, more commonly now, stories that we are hearing. And this is why this course that you guys are promoting and just released is so, so important. We haven't actually got to the course this show. So what we're going to do is paint a brighter picture next week.
Yes.
And come and look at some of the solutions that this
there
course
is hope. Offering. Let me tell you, there is absolutely hope.
Some of the hope that is in this course, it's the What's Normal program. And it's by Youth for Christ. It's just been released. Let me give you the website. And again, you can check that out. And if you have young kids, perhaps this is a website, I don't know, that you can explore together, have a conversation around if it's appropriate to do so. But certainly we as parents need to be on the front foot here and not on the back foot. yfc.org.au/what's_normal, yfc.org.au/what's_normal. Or if you go to the Youth for Christ website, just yfc.org.au, you'll find the link there. And of course, check out momentumaustralia.org. We'll have links there too. And we're going to come back next week and chat with the director of What's Normal, Paul Bedwell. It is an absolutely encouraging course, and it is absolutely necessary for such a time as this, educating our young kids on the dangers of pornography. And of course, posing the question, what is normal? Is this really what is normal? And should we stay there? We're going to come and explore that next week with Paul. Paul, it's been great to have you on the show this week, man. We're looking forward to sticking back into this next week right here on Momentum, man. Thanks for your time.
Such a privilege. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to momentumaustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at momentumaustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.